This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our theme today, which is rarely if ever discussed in either the mainstream or alternative media, is the pain, profit, and politics of the war on AIDS. The two participants today, one is Tricia Morrison. She is the widow of Tommy Morrison. You might have known that Tommy Morrison was the world championship heavyweight boxer. He also was in Sylvester Stallone's movie Rocky, and he became a major advocate, along with his wife, for knowing the truth about AIDS. She's here to tell his story, their fight, and where we're at today. My other guest is, at one time he was, the most important voice in the media for the gay community as a whole. Charles Ortlieb was the publisher of the most popular and most widely read gay publication in New York Native, and he had outstanding journalists, some of the best minds in journalism, and they weren't doing this because they were gay. They were doing it because of how misinformation, and as a result, misapplying technologies and therapies such as AZT and other drugs, DDI, DDC, protease inhibitors, were being used on people diagnosed with AIDS-related conditions without telling them the truth. Were these safe? Were they effective? He also dug deep enough and had enough contacts to realize that a segment of the gay community had aligned itself with the pharmaceutical interests who were manufacturing these drugs, making astronomical profits. And yet, the results of these drugs being used were not the eradication of the disease and the improvement of people's health. To the contrary, tens of thousands, minimally, suffered the consequences and many died by doing exactly what their doctor and some of the gay AIDS activists were advocating, take the drugs. There was never a discussion of what would happen if you didn't take the drugs. What if you took a natural approach? We'll discuss that a little later on in the program. Charles ultimately closed down the New York Native after years and years of fighting the good fight. But he was up against multi-billion dollar, by today's standards, profits by these drug companies and the small army of gay and AIDS activists that said, we will not tolerate any dissent. If you do not align yourself with our paradigm, you'll be silenced, you'll be ostracized. And in fact, you had gay-on-gay attacks, something that the media did not cover. This is the story that needs to be told. I'd like to welcome both of you to our program today.
Hi, Gary.
Charles, thank you for being with us. And let's also say hello to Tricia. Tricia, let's begin with you. First, talk about when you first became aware of this problem, and then take a step-by-step in a chronology of what happened to Tommy, what the battle was, who was open to the information and who was not, the battles both of you fought, what ultimately happened to Tommy, and where you are today in trying to get people within our government to pay attention to your message. The floor is yours.
Right. Yeah, Gary, thank you so much for having me on your show. Nice to meet you both. Well, I met Tommy the Duke Morrison, two-time heavyweight boxing champion in the world and co-star with Sylvester Stallone in Rocky V, which actually I've never seen. So that was not the reason why we met. I met him in 2009, Gary, and between 2009 and 2013, HIV became the household word. Basically, everything that I had learned at school and read in the media and everything I was listening to just wasn't making any sense whatsoever. So Tommy and I got married in 2011, and it became very clear that the stigma of having HIV just led to crime, street, hardcore drugs, depression, discrimination. And we spent countless hours every day talking about it, and it just didn't seem to add up, and I'm just a normal person from society coming into this new world of HIV. In 2013, Tommy actually passed away. He was involved in a sting operation where he ended up in jail and in the cell for about 23 hours a day. After 4 weeks, I was finally able to bail him out, and he came out of jail with an insect bite, which was later found out to be a tick bite. And then within a span of 1 week, Tommy was further arrested for loitering at Walmart's door on the way to the airport. He was then taken off the plane and charged with drugs, although later released because the drug test came back negative, and then charged and jailed again that next morning for a DUI, and later released because there was no alcohol in his system. So all these were just very strange occurrences. Then finally, when we got him to a Tennessee surgeon, the surgeon left 12 foot of tightly packed surgical gauze in Tommy's chest to rot for 1 week until I discovered it. It was horrific. And then for the next 21 months in hospital, Tommy was fighting sepsis and finally died of cardiac arrest, septic shock, septicemia, and a blood infection caused by the rotting gauze. At that point, you know, I said to the physician, the infectious disease doctor, I said, you know, they asked me if I wanted an autopsy, and I said, absolutely, I want a blood autopsy, because that's the only other thing he's been attacked to have is HIV. And, you know, I want you to draw his blood, and I want you to show me the virus. Show me what he had. Show me what the world is saying he had and what he had to live with. So they drew the blood, and it was absolutely no problem. They wrote up a, you know, an order for the pathologist there. And it wasn't just one rinky-dink little lab. It's one of the top four hospitals in the nation. Which deal with Ebola, HIV, AIDS, and all kinds of infectious diseases. So I knew that they would, you know, be able to give me a good, firm answer. And I was searching for the virus. I wasn't saying, hey, you know, there's nothing in there. I was waiting for an answer. So September 1, 2013, Tommy passed away. And they drew his blood. And then September 17th, the physician, the infectious physician, called me, and he went, Mrs. Morrison, and I go, yes, I don't know how to say this, but negative, there was no virus in his system. And I said, yeah, I know that, send me through the paperwork. But by then, on September 2nd, the day after Tommy passed away, it hit the media. The media then said, oh, because he was diagnosed with HIV in 1996, kicked out of boxing, he has now died of AIDS. Well, I'm fighting this now because, first of all, the blood autopsy came back with no HIV, no budding retroviruses, and I've since learned that a retrovirus is what HIV is supposed to be. No viral particles. So if you have a virus, you should have some viral particles swimming around there. And no abnormalities. I mean, it's as clear as anything on a pathology lab report signed off by a pathologist and an infectious disease person. It's not a clinical lab report from a clinical lab like Quest Diagnostics, who have informed me that their lab report is not even a diagnosis. So I'm holding all this information. In addition, prior to Tommy's death, I had him actually tested for all the so-called AIDS-defining diseases, because I found out that AIDS is not one thing. It's like 50 to 100 different things. So I had him tested for Kaposi sarcoma and PCP and all these various stuff, all came back negative. They even tested him for this thing called HTLV-1 and HTLV-2, and he was negative on that too. So he had no AIDS defining diseases, and he had no virus. So just as a normal person, I contacted the physician in Las Vegas in 96 that the media said had diagnosed Tommy with HIV. And I emailed him and I said, you know what, you better have good medical malpractice because my husband did not have HIV. And about 2 months later, I get an email back from his attorney saying, you know, sorry for your loss and all that sort of stuff. But the physician did not diagnose him with HIV. So now I'm confused. Okay, so if a physician doesn't diagnose, okay, then it must be the test kit company. So I went directly to the test kit companies, Abbott, Roche, the Western Blot, and emailed them. They emailed me back and said, no, we don't diagnose. We just make the test. We never see the patient. We don't draw the blood. We're not there. We don't know what other ailments could cause a false positive or a reaction to our test. So I'm thinking, what do you mean a false positive? And then they explained to me, well, we have packet inserts when we sell our tests to the labs that say our tests are not specific to HIV or HIV antibodies. They don't detect the virus. And you could be suffering some other kind of ailment and it'll trigger a reaction. But it doesn't mean that you have the virus, because of course we don't test for the virus, and it doesn't mean that the antibodies are specific for HIV. So yeah, oh, okay, well then if it's not the physician, then it's not the test kit companies by their own admission. So I go to the clinical labs and I email Mayo Lab and Quest Diagnostics and a whole bunch of labs that are affiliated with Quest, because I guess they go around buying all these labs now. And I ask them directly, you know, the physician said he didn't diagnose, the lab says they don't, the test kit companies say they don't diagnose. So your piece of paper that you print and you send on the fax machine to a physician, or you email it, or whatever, is that a diagnosis? So you guys are the ones diagnosing. He said, no, we don't diagnose. We just run the test, that's all. And I said, well, who does do the diagnosing? Well, it's the physician. So I go back again to the physicians, and we're talking maybe about 15, 20 physicians, and I said, you know, you diagnosed him. And they go, no, we didn't diagnose. We just read off the lab report that he had HIV. And then I then questioned them and said, in fact, sent them a whole laundry list of reasons why somebody can react to a test. And I said, did you test them for this and this and this and this? You know, anemia. Bilateral sinusitis. Did you test Tommy for all these things? Well, no, we didn't. Well, then how do you know he had HIV? Well, that's what the lab report says. But the lab says they don't diagnose. So it was real interesting. Then I went to the FDA and I asked them, you know, what test diagnoses HIV? And they respond back, well, we can't tell you. You know, we don't recommend anything. You know, you have to ask your physician. So then I asked the FDA, well, you know, the physicians have been using these tests. Do you have the clinical trials for these tests so I can see, you know, what the results were and who funded them? And so that took probably a few months, and they said, no, we don't. You know, you should ask the Freedom of Information and get it from them. Well, I asked for it from them, and it's not there. And then I was referred to a website for the clinical trials. It's not there. It's not anywhere. So then I went to another government agency, the CDC, and I said, okay, so now let's talk about a T-cell count. So if somebody has a T-cell count of 2 or 12 or 200 or 400, and the lab sends a printout to the physician with a T-cell count and says that he's dying of AIDS, is that sufficient? And they go, no, it's not sufficient. And in fact, you know, it's actually filed in the CDC MMWR. It's kind of a report that they bring out that a lab-initiated report is insufficient for a diagnosis of AIDS. You have to be able to also add it up with HIV infection. And the physician has to be absolutely sure that Tommy had HIV infection. So then I went back again to the labs, and I went back again to the test kit companies, and I said, okay, which test detects HIV infection? Oh, well, Roche. Roche Diagnostics, their PCR viral load detects HIV infection. So I go, okay, finally, I found the test. So I contact Roche, and I say, okay, you guys diagnosed my husband with HIV infection using your PCR viral load test. Is that correct? And I get an email back saying, no, we don't diagnose that. You know, if you look at our packet insert, page 2, and they sent me an attachment, it clearly says on there, our test is not to be used to diagnose HIV infection or the virus. So I said, well, who does? And they couldn't respond back to me. And I said, well, why isn't anybody seeing these packet inserts? So I went back to the FDA, and they said, well, you know, the physician has them. He should be able to tell the patient what's in the packet inserts. I went to the CDC, and they said, well, you know, we don't recommend any testing. You know, we can't recommend. We're just the CDC. So I went back to the test kit companies, and I said, well, who gets to see the packet inserts? Well, the lab, because we sell our test to the lab. And then I went to the lab at, for example, Quest Diagnostics, and they said, well, you know, it's not our, you know, thing to give out packet inserts. You know, the physician can easily get them. So I went back to the physician and I said, do you know about these packet inserts? And I've actually got depositions of a physician where he says, no, I know nothing about the packet inserts. All I do when somebody walks in, for example, like Tommy, is I get a test requisition form, and there's a little box there that says HIV, and I check it and send the blood with that requisition. So I said, you don't know what test you're doing. You don't know about the packet inserts, that somebody can react if they've got something else in their blood. They go, no, you know, we rely on the lab. So it's been a real interesting research. So basically, you know, here we are in 2017. I've got a printout from one of the best pathology departments and pathologist who's worked in the field, an expert in the field of HIV AIDS, with a report that says that there was nothing in his blood, in fact, other than anemia. That's what poor old Tommy had. And in addition to that, I actually had a test done a year before Tommy died and sent it to Boston, Massachusetts General Hospital, exactly the same thing. Drew his blood, sent it out there. They're, you know, one of the top in virology and microbiology. Same thing, came back. And so you've got two independent labs, two independent pathologists doing tests, actually looking at the blood through an electron microscope, which is the traditional method and so-called the way that the inventor or discoverer, Dr. Robert Gallo, invented or discovered his virus was by looking at it under a microscope and finding it. So that was the ultimate gold standard test, and it's a traditional method. But the only problem is, Gary, is that it's not a commercial test. It's not being commercially sold by Quest Diagnostics. So Quest are saying, well, you can't see the virus. Oh, really, unless you take one of our tests. Well, no, that's actually not true. So here I am holding a lab report from Boston, a lab report from Omaha, Nebraska, photo images of Tommy's blood, and no viral particles, no budding retroviruses, no abnormalities from two independent labs, and from my research in science that's called repetition, right? Which means that they've repeated it twice and it's come out with the same answer. And for anybody that doesn't know what an electron microscope is, which I had no clue about, I mean, I'm just like every listener out there, it's like looking into a goldfish bowl. You can see everything that's swimming in there. And I learned that the HIV virus is 120 nanometers in size, which none of the physicians knew in any of the hospitals that Tommy and I went to. And under an electron microscope, you can see the parvovirus, which is, I think, 70 or 80 nanometers. So you can see things smaller than the HIV virus, and nothing, no HIV virus was in Tommy's system. In addition to that, none of the tests that he was given actually detected antibodies specific to HIV. I researched, Gary, science journals. I went to Nature. I went to Science, I went to JAMA. I mean, all these different journals that publish the work of scientists, not media, but scientists, and they are then peer-reviewed by scientists that are in the field, as they say, experts in the field is the saying that everybody keeps giving me, where the tests out on the market will actually react to dogs, fish, cows, mice, and people, healthy people with platelets, healthy platelets. So it's really, it's worrying because everybody's under the assumption that if you go to a doctor, you're actually going to get a test that detects the virus. And in fact, Tommy mentioned in a big interview that went worldwide in 1996, that he was just informed, and you can look at it on YouTube, that he has tested positive for the virus. Well, that's not true. You know, poor Tommy didn't know then, and still didn't know when he died, that he never actually really had the virus in his blood. He just knew that he felt good. Why did he feel so good when he was supposed to feel so sick, is what he kept saying. And the only time, he said, that he ever felt sick was when he was given HIV meds. And he, you know, he actually has written it in his book, and he said it, you know, in interviews, and he's told me personally that every time he was given meds, the actual side effects, he said, Tricia, the side effects of these medications are the symptoms of what they say are HIV. And so it was like, huh. All of that didn't make any sense at the time to me until I just went directly to the FDA, CDC, test kit companies, clinical labs, science journals, and scientists. And Gary, I actually made contact with the offices and attorneys and deans of four key people that were involved in Tommy, in Tommy's life. One of them is Dr. David Ho, who is in New York and runs this big AIDS research company. Well, he emails me back saying that he isolated Tommy's virus using the Western blot test. And I got it on email. I mean, how stupid is that? I mean, after I've contacted the Western blot companies and they say they don't even detect antibodies, let alone the virus. Then I went to Dr. Robert Gallo's institute there at the University of Maryland Medical Center, got the complete runaround. Now, you would think for somebody that made a discovery 33 years ago would be happy to help the widow of two-time heavyweight boxing champion of the world, so-called Mr. Poz, for the last, you know, 20, 30 years. But no. You know, he didn't send me any information. He refused to send me what the virus looked like under a microscope. He refused to send me any information whatsoever. And then the other guy is a guy called Dr. Anthony Fauci, who I've researched. And I've got nothing against these guys. I just want them to show me the virus. That's all I've ever asked for. And they're the ones that are experts in the field and have promoted it and are trying to find a cure for it and scaring people like Tommy and ruining their lives. They're going through discrimination. And so, you know, I asked and sent an email to Dr. Anthony Fauci, you know, please show me the virus. You know, show me how you, there's a term, scientific term, which I've learned and researched called isolation and purification. And basically is you look at Tommy's blood and you've got a whole bunch of things swimming in there. So what you do is you take out anything that looks like a virus. You stick it into another dish called a petri dish, right? A little bowl. And so you've just got in one bowl the virus that you think is the virus. And then there's another step that you take just one of those little virus particles out of that bowl and put it into its own bowl. And then you chop it up, you crunch it up, fragment it, or whatever you want to call it in scientific terms. And then you dissect it and you see all the proteins that make up that viral particle. That's all I want to see, Gary, is I want to see those three steps there, you know, of them taking out the virus out of a whole fishbowl, putting it into its own little bowl, taking a photograph of it, getting, it's called the morphology, I think is what it's called, is how it's made up, what it looks like, and the shape of it, and the size, and photographing it, and then in the next dish is looking at all the different proteins. There's like P24, P, you know, P39, P whatever are the proteins that are supposed to be specific to the virus. Well, they're not. And that's as per the science journals and the scientists that have written articles, peer reviewed from all over the world. P24 isn't specific to HIV. You know, P41 you can find in fish, and P whatever you can find in mice, and P whatever doesn't even exist. So it's been a real interesting learning curve here. And all I'm trying to get the answers is I want to see the virus on its own, and then I want to see the virus of all the fragmented to see what kind of proteins make it out for. Because, guys, my paperwork and my pathology report doesn't even show a viral particle, doesn't even show a budding retrovirus, which is supposed to be these little blobs that float off a cell and they're full of virus, and doesn't even show any abnormalities. You know, it's a clean, healthy picture of good blood, and lots of photographs were taken, not just one, but lots of photographs from two independent labs. So I need to help, you know, and any listeners, you know, help me. All I want you to do is just send me the isolation and purification of Tommy's virus that everybody or millions of people have. I mean, it cannot be that difficult, Gary. We're in the year 2017. It was supposedly isolated and purified in 1983, 1984, and surely it's been isolated and purified in the last 33 years. And there must be somewhere where I can find a clear picture of just the virus itself, but I can't. And if there's any scientists out there, that's all I ask for, and I'd be your biggest advocate saying, you know what, guys? Yes, it exists. Here it is. Here is the evidence. But let me tell you something. Here is also the evidence of Tommy Morrison. And whether it exists or not, that's great, but it did not exist in Tommy Morrison's blood. He was one of the unfortunate people that reacted to tests that do not detect antibodies specific to HIV and do not detect the virus. And also, he did not turn positive on any tests that are under the AIDS umbrella. So that's where I am. I am today, Gary, and it would just be neat because I'd come back on your show, you know, and I'll tell you, here it is.
Tricia, we gave you about 35 minutes there. I think you did a very good job laying out your arguments. Now let's bring in Charles Eatley. He's been down this path. He's done his homework. Charles, please take any part of what her concerns are Give us your input, and then tell us what your concerns are, what you discovered, what your journalist discovered that would contradict the existing AIDS paradigm.
Well, I have to say, when she said, I've got nothing against these guys. Well, I've got a lot against these guys. David Ho, Robert Gallo, and Anthony Fauci. I mean, from my perspective, they've been running a Ponzi scheme. And, you know, the problem is that Tricia has actually, she's a little bit like an accountant who takes a peek at Bernie Madoff's books, and she notices that they don't add up. And then, you know, and she'll probably be attacked. People will say, well, you're not a scientist, you know, as in you're not a real accountant. But she's on to the fact that this is a Ponzi scheme. But in order, this sounds like a huge malpractice case, by the way. I mean, this is like a little bit separate from my issues in the sense that, you know, I think this is like one person getting caught up in some serious malpractice. But in the process, you know, of noticing that, she's seen a much bigger crime. And I think I can explain to her what the politics are of that crime, and that is that these three characters, David Ho, Robert Gallo, and Tony Fauci, who all belong in jail, by the way, that they have created an empire around a massive scientific fraud, the way that Bernie Madoff created, you know, a massive fraud, you know, around fake dividends. And they have been giving out fake dividends in the terms of progress on AIDS for years by controlling the information about AIDS. And whenever anyone, like Tricia, notices that something is terribly wrong, they are viciously attacked. She will be, you know, find herself called a threat to public health. She will, the gay community will probably be marshaled against her because she's dares to ask the right questions. In fact, questions that have been asked by, you know, a lot of PhDs, a lot of the smartest people in the world have asked questions like this and gotten nowhere because they're basically fighting, you know, an empire of fraud. And there's so much, it's not just money. There's a ton of money involved here. We're not just talking about the pharmaceutical companies, the testing companies, but we're also talking about the integrity of the American scientific community. Every country in the world looks to America for scientific leadership. If every country in the world finds out that they have been lied to about the nature of the AIDS epidemic, our credibility will be sunk for decades. No one will trust America's Centers for Disease Control or National Institute of Health ever again. And that's why these people like David Ho and Dr. Gallo and Anthony Fauci will fight, you know, to the bitter end. In fact, I believe it's why Anthony Fauci is still working. I mean, he's in his late 70s, and he's probably terrified to leave that job because once he leaves, there are certain things he won't be able to control. He won't be able to control the financing of research. He won't be able to give interviews to the media mocking anyone who questions HIV. I've called it a house of cards, but I've called it the strongest house of cards in history. And I do believe it's going to come down, but it is pretty amazing what they've done.
Charles, take us through the existing paradigm. There are about seven main points to it. That HIV by itself has not only been completely isolated, but has been shown under different technologies to exist, that the antibody test is accurate and a gold standard, that the antiretrovirals are the only approach, that the science behind the proof that these drugs work is substantial, and that everyone, as we were told for years, is equally vulnerable to this virus. Could you go through those, please?
Well, you basically outline, you know, the main points. But, you know, I look at this from a whole different angle. You know, I think that it's a big mistake to talk constantly about HIV, period, that you sort of, it's a trap. I think the debate has to be about two other things, about a virus called HHV6 and an epidemic called chronic fatigue syndrome. That the main game is they do not want the public to know there is a massive epidemic of immune dysfunction that includes chronic fatigue syndrome, AIDS, autism, and a number of other illnesses that are supposedly big mysteries, but really aren't. They do not want the public to know they completely got it wrong and that the worst nightmare did occur. You know, early on in the AIDS epidemic, I was there from day one, as you know. I was there even before the epidemic began. We did a story in the New York Native that we didn't even know was a story about AIDS. There was a rumor of some weird pneumonia taking place in gay men in New York. But, you know, when July 3rd, you know, 1981 came and we did, you know, we saw that story in the Times, we jumped on the story. And, you know, and I've stayed with this story for, you know, to this very day, and I've watched this whole thing unfold. And, you know, and I've watched as one lie has been told after another. And, you know, and the big lie turned out to be that there was a much bigger epidemic. And, you know, early on, they kept saying, we better get this right. If we don't get this right, everyone's in trouble. And see, from my perspective, Gary, everyone is in trouble because we do have a massive epidemic of immune dysfunction in this country. I mean, just sit in front of your TV set for 8 hours and watch all the ads for things like fibromyalgia, for irritable bowel syndrome, for dry eyes. You know, all these things that are associated with supposedly autoimmunity and also, by the way, are all linked in a way to HHV6, this virus that I think Fauci, Ho, and Gallo are trying to keep the lid on. You know, that's the problem. You know, they have something big to hide. It's like Madoff. He doesn't want people to find out that he has been giving them dividends that are part of a Ponzi scheme for 35 years. So I have, a different angle, and I mean, I think I can explain why there is such hostility. And I think Tricia will, you know, she's probably already faced some of this hostility. If she's had any encounters with the gay community, and she's certainly gotten it from the scientific community, they either will give her, you know, total silence, or she will be attacked personally. That's the way the game is played.
Could you explain from the inside of the gay community why the gay community did not join forces to look for the truth, as you and your group did, versus allowing a small group to pharmaceutical companies.
You know, ACT UP was able to manipulate the gay community at a time when the gay community was in a state of terror. And I've said that the gay community basically made a pact with the devil, because when Robert Gallo and Margaret Heckler made that famous announcement that HIV is the cause of AIDS, or it was HTLV-3 at the time, everyone breathed a sigh of relief, because suddenly we knew what the disease was, what caused it, how to control it. And the problem is that the gay community, I think, has some kind of unconscious terror that if we, you know, if Tricia and people like her are successful in undermining the paradigm, we're going back to 1980, and it's going to be like no one's going to know what's going on, everyone's going to be in a state of terror, nothing's under control. So, I mean, I think from a psychological perspective, the gay community just doesn't want to go there. They don't, you know, they don't want to ask the hard questions. They, you know, they don't want to know that they're part of a Ponzi scheme, that they're victims of a Ponzi scheme. You know, and by the way, I don't know, Gary, I don't know whether you've done any shows on this yet, but I hope you will. I mean, they're now trying to basically give, you know, this prophylactic chemotherapy to the entire gay community. You know, they want every, you know, sexually active gay person and others to take this Truvada, you know, which has all kinds of side effects. So in essence, they've got one part of the gay community that they're giving protease inhibitors to, and then the other part of the gay community, supposedly uninfected, they're also giving chemotherapy to. So the whole community now is subject to chemotherapy, basically based on scientific fraud. It's absolutely mind-boggling.
Where are the gay leaders challenging this?
They aren't. They can't get the drug out fast enough. they complain if it costs too much. There was one person on the West Coast, I believe, is head of some AIDS organization, who just he asked just some minor questions about, you know, whether it was a good idea or not. He was attacked from every angle. He just, you know, I don't know what's happened to him, but this issue is so explosive that anyone who raises any, you know, questions about it will be destroyed, or they'll try to destroy them. So I mean, it's going to take some interesting strategy. You know, I think class action lawyers should be involved in this, and they should try a bunch of different angles on this. But but you have to educate them, and you know, and that takes some doing. And you know, and they would be fighting City Hall, and everyone knows that the CDC, you know, and NIH are full of, you know, the best people on earth. So you know, you try to tell them that there's a lot of lying going on at the CDC and the NIH, and they think you're nuts, or in denial, or whatever. But you know, I do think.
Charles, how were you attacked?
How were we attacked? ACT UP. There, a couple of things happened. ACT UP voted to boycott my newspaper. Okay. But at that point, like many newspapers, we were all also given away. So in other words, to distribute our paper, we'd have piles of papers at various gay institutions. And what was happening is people would go into those institutions often and take the papers and just throw them in the garbage. So between an organized boycott and that, you know, it became almost impossible to stay in business. And, you know, and at the same time, you know, David Ho was being treated like, you know, the great savior of the gay community with his cocktail, which we now know was based on a lot of fraud. And, you know, and even though it seemed to work, you know, a lot of the science that went into it was really bad, and it was cherry-picked, and, you know, it definitely doesn't hold up over time, but it has the appearance of working. So the gay community felt, oh, you know, this is under control, we're safe, we have a treatment, you know, you're like, you know, the person on the island after the war ended, and no one told you it ended. But you know what, the war has not ended at all. I mean, when you have the entire gay community now being put on chemotherapy, it's gotten worse. I think, Gary, things are worse right now than they were 20 years ago.
I just saw a 12.5-minute film by Joan Shenton, award-winning documentarian who was very popular in British media for decades. Now, it's a simple film where five individuals, all from northern Spain, one was a medical doctor. They all have something in common. They're not attacking the politics of AIDS. They don't have a single thing to say about HIV or any of the people you've been mentioning, but they're all alive 30 years after their diagnosis. They have taken no drugs, none. They're happy, healthy, and living a normal life. And the physician said one thing near the end of this 12.5-minute film. He said, if only I would have known then what I know now, I'd be living a completely different life. So why don't we hear about the long-term survivors who've been diagnosed with AIDS, not just HIV infection or asymptomatic, who have not taken the drugs, and everywhere that Joan Shenton was accepted into a film festival, including the London International Film Festival, gay organizations and pharmaceutical organizations called and had the film rescinded. So it's been a very difficult journey for Joan
I think there's another message that might be equally effective or even more effective, which is, why do we not hear about the non-HIV AIDS epidemic in the gay community? The non-HIV AIDS epidemic in the gay community. What do I mean by that? Well, I know we don't have much time, but back in March, in the Huffington Post, this guy did a story about gay loneliness, and he found this epidemiologist who did a study of the gay community, okay? And the whole point of the article was that gay loneliness was killing gay men, either through suicide or health problems, okay? But there was one sentence in there about the epidemiologist that fascinated me. He said he found that gay men everywhere at every age have higher rates of cardiovascular disease, cancer, incontinence, erectile dysfunction, allergies, and asthma. Now, when I saw that, they were trying to say, oh, that's from loneliness and oppression. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wait a minute. You know, I felt like it's 1980 again. I thought, that's not, those are not things that just automatically develop when you're lonely, you know. And I thought, there it is. That's what I have been waiting to see, that because HIV was mistakenly identified as the cause of AIDS, the real AIDS epidemic has never been controlled in the gay community. There is a non-HIV AIDS epidemic in the gay community. And I believe it's that non-HIV AIDS community that will undermine the so-called HIV AIDS community, especially since, you know what chronic fatigue syndrome is called by, like, Judy Mikovits, who worked in Gallo's lab, by the way. She calls chronic fatigue syndrome non-HIV AIDS. So it's all those cases out there, and there are millions of people with similar AIDS-like symptoms without HIV, because HIV is a massive fraud, who have non-HIV AIDS. They're the people that I think will ultimately undermine the paradigm that, you know, that Tricia is now looking at.
Very well said. That's a very important original insight you just shared with our audience. I want to add a few things before we end here, and then give both of you a chance for final thoughts. I worked for over 20 years with 1,200 persons from the gay community with full-blown AIDS. None of these were just HIV positive, but asymptomatic. They had pneumocystis, they had Kaposi sarcoma, they had thrush, they had all wasting disease, etc. From the time they started their therapy at the Tri-State Healing Center, including a healthy plant-based diet, 10 to 15 glasses of fresh juices a day, including ginger juice, lemon juice, bitter melon juice, intravenous vitamin drips, including up to 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C, glutathione, and aqueous vitamin A, which was a water-based vitamin A. Also getting body-mind therapies to relax themselves, not fear that they had a death sentence. I didn't have a single patient die. To the contrary, 12 people who decided to go into the advanced protocol, which is 5 days a week, 4 hours a day, they reversed all their AIDS conditions when HIV positive and negative. No one wanted to hear this information, except a friend of mine, Stokely Carmichael, one of the great black voices, Arthur Ashe, the publisher of the Amsterdam News, Bill Tatum, the lawyer, activist, author, Doug Henderson, and then finally a call one day from Tony Brown of Tony Brown Journal on PBS, and then asked if I do a discussion of this in the African-American community at the Apollo Theater. You couldn't get in. Every day for a week it was packed. The Nation of Islam was there. All these different groups were there. We weren't there to talk about politics. We were there to talk about natural approaches to AIDS. Black physicians were there. So within a year, all across the African-American community, people were looking at AIDS not as a death sentence, but as a chance to rejuvenate their health. And as I said to them, mirroring something you just said, Charles, we only have about 2% of heterosexuals that participated in the sexual revolution, about 2-3% of gays participated in the sexual revolution. You would have thought everyone was, but that wasn't true. And I said, look at who actually has been diagnosed with full-blown AIDS. And you'll see they're sharing very similar lifestyles. But that did not go down with the fast-track gay community and the activists in there who want us to believe that everybody was going to have AIDS. But the Caucasian community did not want to know this message, never wanted to come to our press conference called AIDS is Not a Death Sentence, where we had 100 people who had reversed AIDS or improved with their medical doctors, with their medical records in a scientific panel, 8 hours that went on. Not a single member of the American media was there, not one. And yet they said they'll do anything to find successful treatments. Yeah, if it's theirs and profitable, no one else's. So I believe that today, if your energy was put on getting healthy gays, which are the majority of gays, to realize how they've been used and how a healthy lifestyle can make an enormous difference in immune augmentation, then you're enlisting the very people who are going to help turn the tide.
Yeah, final actually, thoughts. You know what you should try to do is offer to help non-HIV AIDS patients in,
okay.
In the gay community. That would blow the mind of the gay community. You said you started reaching out and saying, my God, there is this massive epidemic of, you know, cardiovascular disease, cancer, incontinence, erectile dysfunction, allergies, asthma, et cetera, all associated with damaged immune systems and all in HIV negative people. And it's in the gay community. Let's, you know, let's start treating HIV negative AIDS. Let's get the HIV negative AIDS epidemic on the front page of the New York Times. Let's have a quilt made up for the HIV negative AIDS. Let's have a gay men's HIV negative AIDS association. Let's have an ACT UP for HIV negative AIDS. That would turn the paradigm upside down.
Let's do it. I'm up for it.
I'm telling you, if you started to focus on you, people will come out of the woodwork. There's a new novelist. His name is Jonathan Lyon. And he has a novel coming out in a few months in America. He's had non-HIV AIDS, okay, or chronic fatigue syndrome for 10 years. But listen to this. His father died of AIDS. Father has AIDS. Son has non-HIV AIDS. It's like, what's wrong with this picture? You know, the more you can bring HIV positive AIDS together with HIV negative AIDS in people's minds, they're going to say, wait a minute. Wait a minute. This does not add up. And this is what Fauci is so afraid of. Fauci has spent more time trying to keep a lid on HIV negative AIDS probably than any other scientist in the world. He has refused to look at chronic fatigue syndrome, aka HIV negative AIDS, because he knows where that's going to go. So,
Charles, when I return from my trip, we'll meet and we'll discuss doing just such a health support group. All right.
Terrific. I think it will have a terrific political impact on the gay community.
And Charles Ortlieb can be reached at charlesortlieb.com, O-R-T-L-E-B. Charles, thank you for being with us today, and we'll go over and say final comments, Tricia.
Yeah, well, that's all very interesting. You're right, I'm not a scientist. I'm just looking at it from a normal person's perspective here. I mean, Gary, if I asked you to show me a picture of your children and you didn't, and then I kept asking you again and again, then maybe you don't have any children, right? So the same thing goes. I'm very confident that that Dr. Gallo, Dr. Ho, and Dr. Fauci will show me the method of how they isolated and purified the virus. I'm absolutely certain of that. And then when they do, I'll be happy to come back on the show and tell you how they isolated it and purified it. And perhaps, Charles, with your help for the gay community, why don't we take 10, 20 people and do the same method all over again, you know, and see if they've got the virus. I mean, you've got contacts there. Certainly the gay community shouldn't attack us or me in any way if I'm offering up exactly the way a virus can be detected. I'm sure they'd be really happy to know that perhaps they don't have the virus. And I too can be contacted, all right? I mean, I will give you an email address here for any scientist that would love to send me an electronic EM of the virus that has been isolated and purified, and any article out of any article, science journal that can tell me how it's been isolated and purified with clinical trials and EMs to support it. Yeah, you're right. I'm kind of like an accountant. I just kind of add up all the little bits.
Tricia, what's your email address? We're out of time.
Okay, it is Tommy the Duke Morrison at yahoo.com.
And I Tommy the Duke Morrison at yahoo.com. Tricia, thank you. Charles, thank you. I'm Gary Noll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love. Don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.